Resonant Truth presents Natural Time, Mayan Astrology for a Modern Age. I'm Lisa Starr. I was raised in the faith of the Mayan sacred calendars. These ancient cycles have been resurrected for a modern audience and called Natural Time, in part because our year of uneven month lengths is, by comparison, really unnatural. I am not here to lead any kind of revolt against the Gregorian calendar, but I do want to bring the Mayan alternative to light, and I want you to know about Mayan astrology, where the passage of time and your birthday within it has deep mystical and magical significance according to indigenous spirituality. I am passionate, I am transparent, and I am emotionally available, if not volatile. And that's because I'm a blue overtone storm. You can find out what you are at resonanttruth.com. Today on the Zolk'in count is called Yellow Rhythmic Sun, and it is the sixth day of the Blue Eagle wave spell, and it is the overtone moon, day 10. And I am coming late to the podcast from our agreed upon schedule. I have super resistance to even this episode because my ears were just blown out by my microphone, which felt like such a sign that perhaps this isn't the best use of my time or yours. I'm feeling a bit depleted by the vague institution of Resonant Truth. So I'm going to start with that. It's a little bit of a, it's not a cry for help, but a cry for understanding that I have podcast for, I've podcast for about 7 years. And then prior to that, I was on the radio. I've been a teacher of this whole system for 20 years. And I've written a book and I've made calendars and I've submitted my book and different book proposals. And I've never broken out of this kind of free sharing of information, and I'm not complaining about the lack of revenue at all, because that part of my life is covered. I am complaining about, like I said, the ambiguity of who is actually informed by anything I put out there, and that sometimes it just feels like there is no growth or expansion of the concern for this indigenous teaching, and that I wish it were popularized to just enough of an extent that I could get support in what I do, i.e. I wouldn't be podcasting alone using a microphone that just made my ears and my dog's ears hurt, that I maybe didn't even put myself out there in such casual and quote-unquote unprofessional terms. I wish it was a more professional and collaborative experience making podcasts. And I wish that this was also vastly interesting to people, that it would support that, that I could have a producer or an editor or be published in a way by a publishing company. So I am just saying that because I'm so close to taking a break again, and there's not really anything you can do to make that different. Maybe you could embrace my wish. It could just be something that you think about when you listen, like, oh, that would be great if there were enough people interested in this, that there could be a little niche in the market for Natural Time to be exposed and expressed and shared. I often don't get hung up on that at all, but I just feel weary. I feel weary of the DIY experience, probably because I'm about to do a big DIY home renovation and put my energy attention there, and you guys are going to get just like the even less professional part of me, just like, well, I'm touching in on the go, on the fly, in a room that's under construction, because that's sort of my passion and interest, is recreating spaces. So that's what's happening. I just turned 52 yesterday, and this podcast is meant to kind of explain what that feels like and really sell you on making your 52-year birthday / Mayan return auspicious, putting a lot of attention on it, making it both celebrative but also a moment of seeking. of understanding what is being implied by the transit so that you can read the signs and symbols that arrive in your own life. And I also want to say that having turned 52, I do believe like a new age, you know, of a culture, that my new age, having turned 52, is not going to warrant a lot of reflection as the lead up to it. Now I am reborn and in a different kind of spiritual infancy, and I'm going to continue to make observations, but I really was doing a kind of a countdown here because that's where I think the value is in preparing for the ceremony of the change. And, you know, maybe that's the value always in terms of recognizing, you know, true ceremony has a lot of preparation, and then the ceremony happens and you sort of let it go. It turns into ether. It's all given away, given back to spirit. But you can be really diligent and cognizant and devoted in waking up prior so that you enter the moment, the celebrative moment, the ceremonial moment, really exposed, naked to the degree that you can receive whatever is being offered. So that happened to me. Also, I will say that I was trying to start my new age back in my old homeland where I am moving shortly, and instead I had it here where I have been for almost 13 years, and it was fine and beautiful, partly because I celebrated the December 21st, 2012 here in Santa Barbara where I live, and I spent that day climbing up the really impressive mountain face. Santa Barbara, it has not very tall mountains, but very steep or sheer mountains that border it along the ocean. So it's ocean and beach, and then right within reach, you know, just a mile away, begins this very steep mountain range. So you can climb up that. It doesn't take long. It takes a couple of hours, and then you're hanging out over the Pacific Ocean and the city, and it's just an incredibly exhilarating spot to perch. And I did that on December 21st, 2012, because I was living here and it was accessible and it was quiet and simple, and it was a revelation. It felt like climbing right up into the sky. I perceived that day as being an open communique between the ascended Maya and ourselves, since we were revering something that was focal for them, a fixed point of their prophetic revelation. So I felt the expansiveness of that day. Of course, it was winter solstice, and just being in this, you know, silent chamber, and almost like an echo chamber of an altered universe, communicating simple language, you know, not like, oh, a bunch of words and ideas about the shifting of ages, but more just like acknowledgement, we're in this together. And it was really spellbinding, and it was just beautiful, as I've described. And so I couldn't really think of something else to do on my Mayan galactic return here other than replicate that. And it worked out beautifully. When it was December 21st, 2012, essentially 8 years ago, I was alone, and this time I had my four dogs, and they are the best. They are amazing creatures. I just realized I've spent so much time watching dogs walking and trotting ahead of me, and essentially it's been 8 years that I've had dogs. It was shortly after that prophecy day. And it's just something very nutritive and completely meditative about watching dogs walk on a path ahead of you. And I'm really lucky because my huskies that I had originally never checked on me to see how I was doing on the path, but the bulldogs that I have, additionally, these twin blue lunar eagle Gemini bulldogs, always come and see how I'm doing because I'm slower than them. So they get ahead and then they come back. And I just found that very tender, reassuring, and loving. It really implied that I am important and also cared for. And it's also sort of blue eagle in their wave spell that they're keeping their eyes on me. So that was different than being alone with the ascended Maya and instead having the sense of a true family here on Earth. I know that people that have dogs are in the camp of like, yeah, dogs are like angels on Earth. They're better than humans. We're so lucky. And then maybe people who listen or don't listen anymore because of my dog-centric life think that that's kind of an excuse and more, more trivial than human interaction or what have you. But it is real that I have four distinct and yet collective companions that I do everything in nature with. And so it was really fun to introduce them to this climb, a 4-hour journey, so much longer than our daily hikes, and disappearing into the atmosphere of being so high up in the winter sunlight. And it's a desert region, and it's just extraordinarily impressive to be around giant orange-pink shaded boulders and cliff faces, and also at the same time looking out at this vivid expanse of blue that is the Pacific Ocean, in which I have lived along most of my years and always been a Californian, the Pacific Ocean that calms us. And, you know, the rest of what happened yesterday, I'll share a couple of anecdotes. I mean, I've been very specific in my understanding of what 52 brings, that for the 52 years that we live from birth onward, we are very attached to our DNA family, our traditional familial relationships with parents and siblings and extended relatives, that we are born into an astrology, but we're born into a human family, and we wrestle with that, we have recognition of that. But when we turn 52, there is a shift that could be most simplistically described as becoming a child of God. And that just means that I think you're liberated if it's been traumatic to be from your family of origin, or it's just entangling, that you're liberated. That's unknotted, because in an ancient society, 52 would have been an appropriate age to levitate, to leave Earth, to complete a life cycle. And as we can live onward, ever onward in advancing medical technology, then what we are able to do is become angels on Earth. And that is redundant, because I say that every time I talk about turning 52. So being an angel on Earth, again, that's just like a child of God, angel on Earth, these little phrases to me recognize that you become unencumbered by some of the problematic things that were introduced to you in your upbringing. You're more free spiritually, and that the natural impulse when you're not cluttered or contaminated by, you know, toxic human behaviors that you were introduced to and adopted in your family life, in your human life, you can, with that new freedom, look around and see, well, what can I do to help? I survived that, and maybe I even thrived. And not everyone has a rude awakening in their family of origin experience, but nonetheless, when you get to 52, you can sort of slough off some of those concerns and obligations and see how you can be more widely available, useful, and helpful. And I think that creates a major reckoning, because you have to get rid of entanglement or obligation that isn't innately helpful and of service to others or angelic. And so there are things that happen around people's approach to 52 that just look traumatizing of their own. You know, people get sick, people lose employment, people's long-term relationships end. There could be an injury, you know, just like dramatic things spark around this age transit. And I like to frame it as it's whatever's necessary to get us to this point of awakening, where we're not just going to continue as we have journeyed. We're going to have this decisive moment of rebirth that redirects us or opens us wider. And like I really feel personally, like liberates us. Like, oh, okay, that's not so important. And it's not holding and limiting me. So look, in this place of liberation, I want to be actively involved in another way. And what is that way? So, but the spark of turning 52, I just have to tell you one of my biggest revelations besides just the love of animals that I hold and that is pivotal, apocryphal for me, is I love dreaming. I just love dreams. I was talking just casually to my daughter, who's 22 actually, just yesterday, and I'm just like, how can you not believe in magic based on how humans dream? It's just unreal. That's the perfect word, right? It's surreal. It's this other real. She's like, yeah, it's like an alternate reality. And exactly. You know, how can we believe that things are linear or mental when dreams exist and take us on these fantastical non-linear experiences? I mean, everyone's dreaming style is different. Mine is truly endlessly just like an alternate reality. Very realistic things happen there, but they're not things that I've already experienced. They're not memories. They're not things I've witnessed personally. They're just invented. They come out of nowhere / the collective unconscious. It's almost like collage, which is one of my art forms. I believe that everything I dream has been seen by some other soul, but maybe not in that sequence. And it's tailored to present itself as something from my life. And I'll use the example of what I dreamed on my 52nd birthday in a moment. It's just thrilling to me. And I guess I have a huge dependency on it, or I would say, I'm in abeyance. I am devoted. I'm a devotee of dreaming because I don't take it so seriously that it has to be real in my waking hours. But I am so fascinated by it that it is one of the places where I just, you know, live most joyously in reference to dreaming. Some dreams are painful and they are rude awakenings of their own, but they nonetheless inform and make life so splendid because the additional information of what happens nocturnally in our minds and souls, just to me, it sort of saves the dullness of the days or the redundancy. I'm not saying that being alive is all boredom. I just mostly feel like, yeah, we're asked to do a lot of the same things each day and our behaviors become slightly mechanized. But in dreaming, it's all, you know, off the rails. So it is exciting, you know, when you're 52 and you wake from dreams, you can imagine that day that the dreams are probably important or connected. So I dreamed that I live in a house, beautiful home that's now been dismantled into moving boxes, and I still have extra days here. So I just live in this sort of artistic edifice of cardboard boxes. And I was hosting my father, and I can't remember the sequence exactly, but it ended up being my father and my mother, who've been divorced for close to 50 years, and then this man that I had dated. He's a blue overtone eagle. So it's his wave spell, and it was an overtone day within the overtone moon. So he became this third wheel. My mother's a blue eagle. My father is a red earth. So that's just more that it was like, oh, I'm recreating my birth family in my dream, the people that shared my conception with me. I'm an only child. So I'm their only triangulated offspring. And so they were both present in the dream. And then this man, who's not a figure in my life currently, but he was in my dream life. And, you know, also, I think somewhat interestingly, I haven't thought about him in a while, but I had seen something that referenced his passion, which is golf, the night before I went to sleep. So without having thought about him for a while and thinking about golf and thinking about him, I guess he got implanted a bit in my transit. So that dream then morphed to part two, where I was watching. He was in an exchange with me where he was showing me on his phone a video of him reuniting for the first time with his adult daughter. And it was such an incredible celebration that was demonstrated on the phone video. You know, I think for me in the dream, I wasn't looking at a phone. I was looking at what actually happened. This talk about like a birthday celebration compared, 52nd birthday celebration is on a par with reuniting with a child you haven't seen since infancy, if ever. The joy, the ebullience, the unbridled devotional love. And I mean, and how fascinating to see that. I don't know that every child reunited with a parent that they hadn't known their whole lives would run into their arms and jump for joy, which is what I was being shown. But that happened in this case in my dream. And I'm going to stop for a moment and go, I don't think dreams are interesting to talk about at all. And I'm sorry that I'm kind of putting that down here. It's mostly to just, once again, and I'll stop talking about the details, to emphasize, I know none of you are almost 52. That's why I wish I had a wider audience. I guess maybe I feel like crying because that's what I meant at the front of the episode. Like, I wish all the people that are turning 52 in the next 260 days could track themselves with such reverence and personal importance that they are beacons of their own prophecy and the prophecy for others. That, you know, turning 52 for all of us is a specialized, rarefied atmospheric space in a lifetime and on Earth. All the 51 to 53-year-olds around you matter in Mayan teaching. And so I wish that someone who were about to turn 52 could hear me and benefit from, again, I'm not having like a super exemplary 52nd return. I'm having one, though. So not to get too detailed in the dreaming, what I just really loved was that I ended up reaching out to this man and I didn't say it's my birthday. I just told him I had woken from a dream and it was an overtone day and an overtone moon in the Blue Eagle wave spell. And then later he texted back, happy birthday. And I was laughing inwardly because, you know, the joke on your Mayan birthday, I mean, I think the joke for me is that I don't really celebrate my Gregorian birthday the same way I celebrate the blue overtone storm days that come every 260 days. And so, you know, when you're 52, it's both. So people can say happy birthday and it touches you deeply, because he could be saying happy birthday because he knew my birthday was November 23rd. But inwardly, I could feel that I was being celebrated for a blue overtone storm moment. So anyhow, the last thing that you can do when you turn 52 is see what happens on your 52nd birthday, that day around you with the people that you know. What kind of day are they having? You have, of course, what kind of day are you having? And then what is the culture doing? And I haven't done that research, but that's sort of the last piece. It replicates you being born zero or 260 days old if we perceive that you really come into your first emergence as a child oxygenating separate from your mother after having been alive, you know, a long time, 9 months, we say. But we start this count of aging from when we individuate from our mothers. And when you did that the first time, became your birthday. And at 52, everything is identical to that moment of emergence. So November 23rd, 1968 and November 23rd, 2020 are identical. And that is true now of November 24th, 1968 and November 24th, 2020. Like every day that we track in 2020 is referred back to 1968. And you know that these are both epic, cultural, revolutionary times. The late 60s and now the 2020s. All right, well, that's a long sort of sojourn into my experience recently. The ceremony really for me, of course, is just hiking and walking and being, and being with animal life and being with light, quality of light. I live in a desert place where there aren't tons of animals and birds, but there is all of this light exposure and bare nakedness, you know, against the cliffs and feeling directly connected to what lives in the sky. So that's a lucky blessing. And in terms of the surrounding time, it was fitting that I would be up again on that mountainside and having these Blue Eagle visionary views. I mean, truly, anytime you can see the world from way up above, I mean, certainly an airplane, or when you scale mountains and you look down at townships and there are little grids or speckles of homes, you know, that's an eagle's view and perspective. And it does two things, obviously. One is it minimizes, you know, the everyday fanfare, or the bustle. You're removed from it. And on the other hand, it also liberates you to see something much larger, which is the sea and the sky. And that, I think, is, you know, informs a spiritual perspective in life, that if you're not limited to seeing what sort of the traffic patterns are around you, then you incorporate in your realization, your everyday wakeful awareness, the large expanse of sea and sky, or maybe it would be just broader expanses of earth if you don't live near an ocean and that's your eagle view. But just that things are put in a different perspective, which I think is obvious. And so we're still in this blue eagle time. It's just sort of getting going now. And I have been pretty fixated on myself, so I'm not going to try very hard to be prophetic, i.e. read astrology about this other stuff going on. In the overtone moon yesterday, this birthday was an overtone day within the overtone moon, and so you can also touch down into what is the experience of overtone. It was amplified yesterday. It is empowering. It is radiant. It's faster moving. Things take off. We've had four moons of preparation. You know, again, foundationally, I think when you are working with indigenous teachings, you're traveling back to a time when there was a more languorous pace of necessity, you know, and without mechanization, everything went as slow as humans could create it or capture it. And so we ceremonialize things more slowly, and that means that we have four moons or four tones in every wave spell where we're carefully listening, watching, weighing our best course. We are in some way, I think, slowed and inhibited from just racing forward. But when we get to the overtone, that's permissible and, in fact, appropriate. That's what the overtone is. It's empowerment. Like, take off, let's go. This wave is ready to roll. We're going upward, and there's really no way back. And as an overtone human, as some of you are, you know, you have that urgency. I don't think it's spastic. I think it's more of a really intense drive that you bring to situations, and it does empower people and impresses some people, and sometimes people are overwhelmed. Overtone is can feel overdone, overdriven, being rolled over. And, you know, in a way I say tough shit. Like, we all have a shadow energy in the tone that we're born, you know. If you're born lunar, then you kind of pick at things microscopically wherever you go. That's annoying. When you're magnetic, you can be sort of self-centered because you're all about what's attracting, you're attracting to you, and so on through each of the tones. There are problematic sides in terms of personality that come with each of our assigned astrological tones. But nonetheless, the world needs people to be overtone and self-existing and so on. I mean, everything is needed for a total balance and completion of a wave form. So the overtone moment is forceful, and it's a dramatic change. It's speed and, as I said, drive. And that's happening to us now. And it can feel really wonderful. I think of the holidays, quote unquote, that we begin at Thanksgiving are always, you know, spun through the overtone lens, and it is intense, you know, entering our winter vortex, which includes all this so-called merriment, which is often torturous or, you know, irreverent of nature and focused on material acts and appetites. But nonetheless, there is all of this vibrancy and forcefulness and directive. You know, we're directed towards a form of radiance. And so I think that is fitting, and you can pay attention to that right now. And now I'm sort of on a roll and wish I had more time, but this is another specialized podcast, and I appreciate your patience that I don't have sure footing. It's mostly because I am fully packed and waiting for escrow to close, which is an endless Mercury retrograde explosion in my life, and then I will be somewhere new that is so disjointed, dismantled in certain ways, that it's going to be more of the same fractured presentation. But I'll aim for it because it always feels good, and it feels like a community. So thanks for sharing my birthday with me. I am Lisa Starr. I am another yourself. And in Mayan, we say, in Marrakesh.